All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucksicles? How are you? I am Mark Maron. This is WTF. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your attention and support. Those of you who are in, hanging out, listening to this. Chris D'Elia is on the show today. If you don't know Chris, he's a comedian who I think I did a live one with him a while back from Montreal, but I didn't really get to know him. I think I might have got to know him a little better this time. He's on that show Undateable on NBC. Season 2 of that show premieres next Tuesday, March 17th. Chris D'Elia, who when I met initially, when I first got back to Los Angeles, he was, I don't know how long he's been doing it at that point, but he was this kind of weird, darty guy that used to wear a hoodie and just hang around the Comedy Store and not really hold eye contact very long and kind of just almost like couldn't stand still, really. I never had a good feeling about the guy. And I saw him around, and he started to get a little attention on stage, and it became one of those things where it's like, all right, let's talk, let's do it. So I talked to Chris D'Elia in a little while, but I'm going to talk to you first. Let me update you on some tour information for the Mark Maron Marination Tour, if I may, if you are interested. I don't know if you know, but I will be in Rochester, New York, or outside of Rochester, New York, at the Comedy Club on March 20th and 21st, doing 4 shows up there. And there are tickets available. So why don't you come on down if you're in that area. But I'm going to D.C., I'm going to Philly, I'm going to Boston, I'm going to Madison, Pittsburgh, Royal Oak, Michigan, outside of Detroit, Toronto, Austin, Houston, Dallas, Seattle, Vancouver, San Francisco, Asheville, North Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Atlanta, New Orleans for now. There's talk about adding more dates, more cities. Some second shows have been added in Asheville, North Carolina, just added a second show there. Seattle, Boston, Toronto. There are 2 shows in Philly. Things are looking up. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar for that. I got to get that thing in shape. I'm immersed in the last week of shooting my show. I'm exhausted. I'm not complaining. I'm just beat up. And this is my directing week. So I directed a bit yesterday and the day before. Today I'm directing all day. Very exciting. New skills. It's tricky to direct yourself because I'm a pain in the ass, and I don't take direction well, especially not for myself, ever. So I just got to shut up, move through it. That's the weirdest thing lately about being as uncomfortable as I can be in certain situations. And there's this part of my brain that basically says, don't even pay attention to that. Don't even pay attention to the discomfort. It's just the way it is. It's not always going to be that way, but right now, it's just the way it is. Why focus on it? Why not just shut that part off, acknowledge it, and do what you have to do? All right? It's what? Big surprise. You're fucking uncomfortable. And that's the way I work. That's my work ethic. I'm uncomfortable, terrified sometimes, not as much as I used to be, and I'm just not going to pay attention to those things. It's going to plow ahead like a dumb person for the right reasons, if that makes any sense. Someone plowed their fucking car into me the other day. I got rear-ended, and it's jarring. I'd forgotten that surprise. I'm always anticipating hitting something. I'm always anticipating hitting a car, hitting a person, hitting a curb, a wall, someone hitting me. But you don't ever really remember that sound and that feeling until it happens to you. And I was just waiting to go at a green light. And the light turned green. We were starting to move. There were 2 cars in front of me. And just like, kaboom! And I just flew back. Shit flew off the dash. And I flew forward. And then she hit me again. Bam! I don't know how that happened. But that undeniable dense crunching of metal and that thud, that and you feel completely out of control. That moment is sort of terrifying. Then it ended, and I looked behind me, and that with that kind of like, how the fuck did that happen? It wasn't my fault. I wasn't texting. I was sitting there, wasn't moving. So I pull over, and this woman gets out of a Mercedes SUV, an old one though. And she's like, I don't know what happened. Her car is pretty fucked up. My car is all fucked up. Drivable, but big old dent. And it kind of buckled the side a little bit, you know, like a hit the back end and buckled the side. And she's, you know, going like, I had my glasses. And I'm like, what? My glasses, I don't know. My glasses came down. And I'm like, oh, what is happening? She goes, why were you stopped? And I'm like, because there's a car in front of me. But, you know, he exchanged information. I'm glad nobody was hurt. And I'm not one of those guys. You know, what kind of person? Yeah, I mean, I guess there is a type of person. I've never been the type of person. Like would immediately, right when they got hit like that, would immediately be like, oh, my neck. My neck. My neck needs some money. I've never been that guy. Ever, even when I didn't have money. I was always sort of wary of lawsuits for no reason. I didn't see it as an entitlement. Hey, man, you should get whatever you can no matter what. Personal morality is not important. Personal integrity is not important, man. Game the system. Take it. It's yours. But there is something great about having a car you don't give a shit about. That is a freeing thing. I don't give a fuck. That was on Sunday, and they haven't called me. I called the claim into her insurance company. There's no way that she can claim that it wasn't her fault. But and I'm not even mad at her, really. It's just an accident. I'm glad no one's hurt, but I don't give a fuck about my car. And in my mind, I'm like, maybe I can get enough money to sort of take the money to fix it properly and spread it around a little bit and maybe undent the whole car a little because it's all beat up from me, you know, running into walls beside my driveway because I'm not paying attention. And yeah, I am proud to have a car I don't give a fuck about. And now it has character. It has character. It's scarred. It's wounded. But you guys, you might remember a while back, I talked to a guy named Denny Tedesco on this show. I was back on episode 517. He's the son of Tommy Tedesco, who was a member of the Wrecking Crew. And they were a group of studio musicians that were on just about every album from, you know, Sinatra forward through the Beach Boys. I mean, they were all studio musicians here in L.A. And they're a fascinating group of people. And at that time, Denny was attempting to make a documentary about the Wrecking Crew. And he was working on it for 18 years. It was a real struggle. There were a lot of issues with music rights and other, you know, roadblocks of this kind and that. And when I talked to Denny, he wasn't even sure if the movie was ever going to get released. It was sort of a heartbreaking conversation because this was his life's work and he had some real problems. So he wasn't sure that it was going to happen.
All right. So 1996, I start this. I like to say 17 years ago, 17 years younger and 35 pounds lighter.
Uh huh.
Basically, when I started in 96, Dad got sick, right? He passes away in 97. And right after he passed, I put together a nice 14-minute teaser reel. I got Nancy Sinatra. I got Cher in it at this point. I got everybody going. But no one would touch this damn thing because the music. And they all said...
The licensing.
They said, you got...
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
No, yeah. At that point, now the film's got 120 songs in it.
And what, 90 of them are hits?
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, yeah. 98%, exactly.
Yeah.
So I said to, so I kept going to everybody, said, you're never going to get the labels and the publishers to agree on this. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, I had to keep shooting and go on and carry on.
You have to have the music.
Right. You can't tell the story without it.
Right.
So, you could talk about it. Well, it was going to be a shit documentary.
Right.
So I kept going, and no one would ever jump in. Finally, in 2006... I always talk about crossing that line where you went too far. And my wife thought we just made the most expensive home movie ever.
Yeah.
You know, it was like,
how much are you into it for?
Oh, at that point, a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah.
You know, and now, God, I don't even, I cringe. Because I look at, It's my house.
Yeah.
And so we said, all right, let's make the one jump. Let's go for it. We got to get an editor, producer, slash. And so I got Claire Scanlon, who was my editor. And we cut this thing.
Yeah.
In 2008, we got into the film festivals. Yeah. Did it remarkably well.
Yeah.
Excuse me, easier for a second, I could say. Won a lot of awards. And no one would touch it. But I got
couldn't distribute it. But I couldn't show it.
I could show it, but I paid for the festival use.
Yeah.
But we got Kickstarter finally came in. I had to go. I needed like $350,000.
Yeah.
To really do everything.
Yeah.
And I reached for $250,000 and got $300,000.
Yeah.
So we paid off the Musicians Union.
Okay.
I have a few more songs now. Now I'm hoping to God. As we,
added a few songs.
No, we've paid. We only have a few more songs. I did actually add a couple more since you've seen it.
Yeah,
don't tell anybody.
Okay,
I'm paying for it. Just don't tell my wife.
Yeah.
But what I had to do is basically I still pay. Now I've only got maybe 4 songs left to pay, and I'm done. I'm free, 100% own this thing outright.
Holy shit!
So I played by the rules. I did not. I've not released this film.
And your father would have appreciated that.
Absolutely.
He was a union guy. He got it.
So I'm just hoping to get this thing out there. I'm doing fundraisers. I'm doing private screenings. I've shown this film all around the world.
Well, got good news for Denny. And I'm proud to say that after talking to him, that it's finally happened. The movie is going to be in theaters tomorrow, folks. They got all the issues straightened out and got a distributor. And now you can see the movie in theaters and very soon on DVD. You can go to WreckingCrewFilm.com to find out where it's playing. And I want to personally congratulate Denny Tedesco for hanging in there, man. He did it. It's a good story, man. It's a good story. And it's a good story. Like, someone should have made a documentary about Denny making the fucking documentary. This season of Marin's going to be a trip, man. Going to be some surprises. We worked hard. I dug deep for the acting this week. I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think I could do what I had to do, and I feel like I did it. I did it the best I could, folks. It's all you can do. The best you can do. All you can do is give it your all and not beat the shit out of yourself afterwards and say, well, that wasn't good enough. All right, let's talk to Chris D'Elia. Let me say what he's got. What has he got? Oh, he's got this new stand-up special called White Male Black Comic. You can get it on iTunes, Amazon, and at ChrisD'Elia.com. For just $5, he's got the Undateable thing. All right, let's talk to Chris D'Elia. Know Eagle Rock, that sort of
but that's where this is.
Well, this is right over the hill, basically.
I've been there.
You have?
Yeah, Eagle Rock. Yeah.
What are you doing over there?
It was so long ago. I don't even know.
Did you grow up here?
I did. Yeah, and that's why I know Eagle Rock. But when they sent me the email, they were like, "It's near Eagle Rock," and I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember that place."
Yeah.
So just it's good. It's still here
from some weird part of your past.
Yeah, I grew up in. La Cañada, I moved there when I was 12. So.
La Cañada?
Yeah.
That's like down the street.
Is it really that close to here?
What, on the 2?
Yeah, on the 2, right, exactly, yeah.
Wait, so you just drove by the exit of this place?
I did, now that I realized it was the 2, yes.
Right?
Yeah, I was just following GPS like an idiot.
No, but it's funny, though, there's some places, even where you grow up, where you're like, I don't know, I've driven by that area.
Oh, yeah.
For my entire life.
Yeah.
But I would never go there.
Yeah. Well, why would you go to La Cañada unless you lived there, really? It's like such a home.
Well, there's a gym that I just joined in La Crescenta.
Oh, really?
Which is down the street.
Oh, so it is that close. Wow. La Crescenta is like next to La Cañada. Okay,
exactly.
Cool.
Right. So it's like literally, like I just canceled my Y membership in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I can just drive.
That's too far.
It's like 10 minutes to La Crescenta from here.
That's funny.
Do your folks still live there?
Yeah, they live in La Cañada, yeah. I'll go there after this.
Will you?
No, because they're not. Oh no, they are there. Yeah, they just got back in town. Yeah.
Wait. So where'd you start out though? Where were you born?
New Jersey.
You're a New Jersey guy. I felt that.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the first time I think I registered your existence
yeah.
was Like, I guess I moved back to Los Angeles 2002, and then I did the America stuff. Then I started going to the store, and I guess it was like 2006 or something around there. You know, I knew a few guys there, but you were always like sort of looming around with a hoodie, not really talking. Right. Like, you were like, this Chris, and I'm like, what does he do?
Yeah.
Very quiet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is that guy?
I know. I don't, I have like a fear of like, like being involved, like if there's a group already, which the Comedy Store is very much a fraternity, like, you know, place.
But it shifts though. I mean,
it does.
Ever evolving.
But stream, but I didn't know that going in, right? So when I went in, I was like, I just don't want to say the fucking wrong thing. Like, I remember once, I actually have a memory of set of which maybe like made me the quiet person there on the Comedy Store. I was, I'm friends with Steve Renizzisi right now. He's actually like, I love the guy.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand his style and vibe.
Yeah.
And I had been married for like a year and a half.
Really?
Yeah. When I started stand-up, I was married for about a year and a half.
What year was that?
2006.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Renizzisi was married like the same, like a month later.
Right.
Than I was. And so I overheard him saying, yeah, because I've been married now for about 6 months. And I said, and I just was like, oh, that's a connection.
Yeah.
You know, right. I mean, I didn't think that's a connection, but I was like, it's just conversation. This is how life is. So I'll say something now. And
this is how it works.
Yeah. And I said, oh, yeah, no shit. Me too.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah, when'd you get married? And I was like, well, I got married in August. And he said, oh, well, I got married in September. That was 7 months to me. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
End of conversation.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess I can't argue with that. But I mean, like, and then I was like, man, it's fucking rough out here.
I can't even get in on it, like a month off and I'm out.
Yeah, I know. And I've talked to Steve about that since, and I was like, yo, why did you say that? Like, who gives a fuck if it's 6 months or 7 months?
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know. He actually said, I don't know, probably because it wasn't fucking 6 months. And so I was like, yeah, I get it now. I get it here, and I get you now. But back then, I was like hypersensitive to like being the new guy.
So you were just awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I just, I didn't know what you were up to. And I remember looking at you, I'm like, that kid doesn't even look like he can talk.
I know.
I mean, how the fuck is he going to be funny, that guy?
I know.
And like, I just remembered you wearing a hoodie all the time.
I know, I did. I wore hoodies all the time.
And it was like you were just kind of lurking around.
Yeah.
And but then again, like I never hung out and necessarily watched people, you know, so.
Right.
And then by the time I saw you, I'm like, that was that kid with the hoodie. Now he's jumping around.
He's screaming.
He's huge. I couldn't fucking believe it. But your parents are both from Jersey?
Well, my dad's from Queens, New York.
Queens?
Yeah. And my mom's from Newark.
Oh, yeah. So you're real fucking East Coast.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But your dad was, he's an Italian guy.
Yeah, my dad's Italian.
Like real Italian?
My mom's Italian. I'm half Italian, so whatever that equals.
What do you mean? So your mom's not Italian?
No, my mom's Italian and my dad's Italian, but my mom's also Polish, and I think my dad's Irish, too.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
So they're not like,
I'm American, you know?
No, I know. But you didn't have any of that in your family? You don't have like
My family, if I have an Uncle Vinny.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when we go back, people are just like, hey, it's that. It's,
yeah, that's just, your father's side.
Yeah. Absolutely. And my mother's side too, though. Like, they'll be like, you know, like I had a cousin Butch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, real Italian shit.
Uh-huh.
Where it was like, I would watch The Sopranos and be like, oh, that's comforting.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. That feels like home to me.
Yeah.
So you grew
and
up
they would lie, you know, like my family would say shit like, you know, he's connected. And you're like, he's not, but okay. You know, like that kind of shit.
Every Italian family is like, they think they got the one guy.
Absolutely.
Stole a truck once.
Absolutely.
And that's it. So you grew up with that kind of like, what, spaghetti and pasta and
my dad,
grandmother?
My dad would cook
pasta
all the time. I mean, we had pasta probably, almost every day.
Did you have a grandmother?
Yeah, my mom's mom, Carmella.
Right. Yeah.
Another Italian.
Yeah.
Name. Would cook. Yeah, she would cook the meat sauce.
I like knowing that you're from New Jersey. there's something about that, like, because I, you know, my family comes from New Jersey, but you don't strike me as you're not, you know, I don't identify you as like the, you know, kind of a Italian guy.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I when I, I think part of, well, you know me just from when I've been doing stand-up, and I think that when I was, you know, now as a stand-up, like, I always feel like comedians are repping other places.
Right.
And I came up here, and I want to be like, I'm from L.A.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, because I started in L.A.
Right.
You know, so.
And that's rare.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
It is, I know. Well, and I know why now that I started in LA, because it's hard to keep the eyes off of you when you're working shit out new. Like, I mean,
it's hard to be anonymous.
Yeah.
But was that okay? So your father, when you were 12 years old, why did your father move you? Like, he's a TV guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's a director and a producer.
But like a big shot.
Yeah,
right?
he's done a lot of stuff, yeah. TV.
Yeah. Yeah. So you grew up in the business, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, when I was 12, we moved out. My dad was a commercial director, and he had a company in New York, and he would drive there every day.
Right.
And then when we moved from New York, it was like he got a gig directing Doogie Howser. I think was the first thing he directed.
Really?
TV-wise, yeah. Stephen Boschko gave him his first job, and my dad says to this day he still has no fucking idea why he gave it to him, but he got, you know, he directed Doogie Howser, and then he would fly back and forth, and then it got to the point where he was getting enough work. He got on that show. He was one of the directors on that show, Northern Exposure.
Sure.
And he was out here enough to where he would stay out here for a few months.
Right.
And then it just became, let's go visit Dad in LA, and then it became, okay, let's live in LA.
So he was kind of not around for a while?
Yeah, but not like
where's Dad? Like any, we don't remember you?
Not any kind of damaging
shit. Didn't fuck
going
you
on.
Up?
No, no.
Something else did?
Not that. Yeah, that did not fuck me up.
I tell you,
no.
Something did. Something made you screwy.
Maybe, yeah.
So, all right, so he's directing Doogie Howser.
Yeah.
And then what else does he do? So you move out here, but he moves to La Crescenta, so you're not Hollywood.
La Cunada. No, yeah, we moved to La Cunada, and I remember the big thing there was like, hey, Kevin Costner lives here. He used to live there.
Yeah.
And I moved there when I was in, you know, I guess I was in, it was right when everyone went to middle school. So my parents were like, hey, it's great because all the kids are coming from different schools, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
And that was kind of good. But I remember when I got there, this is actually pretty embarrassing. Not so much now because I'm a fucking man, but like, I remember being, I loved the show 90210, the first one, not the one that's on now,
the original?
A few years ago. Yeah, the original. Yeah. And I loved Luke Perry.
Yeah.
And I thought he was so cool. And I did my hair up like him.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was how it was. It should be in LA. I was like, well, they live in Cali, they'll get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Beverly Hills, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I went to, I would always get made fun of with that hair. They would be like, your fucking hair's so high. Why do you do that? And I would never say, because fucking Luke Perry does it,
right.
You know? But I knew that that was like, I was like, and I'm such like a fucking, I'm so like hard-headed that I would be like, they don't know how it is in California. This is how you do your hair in California.
You're in California, but they're missing the point.
This kid coming from New Jersey with a grandmother named Carmela was like, they don't get it. They don't get the California lifestyle.
So, but you identify with it early on. So you're like, what, 13 or 14?
I was 13. Yeah, I was 13, 14. And then
you wanted to be Luke Perry.
Yeah.
Well, he was pretty cool, I guess, right?
He was like the cool guy when you were 13.
Yeah.
But, and my dad would direct that show. So I got to meet him and I was like,
well, wait a minute. So wait, you're 14.
Yeah.
So your dad's like, yeah, I direct that
my
show.
My dad was like, I'm going to try and get to direct that show because you love that show.
Really?
Yeah.
And he did?
And he was able to you know, find his way in there, and he directed one or two of them. And we went on set. We met all those guys, Jason Priestley. And
did you have your hair up?
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, and you know what? Now thinking back on it, my dad must have said something to Luke Perry because my dad was, Luke Perry said, hey, come here. And I walked over and he said, hey, you got cool hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now actually thinking of, I mean, I haven't told that story in so long. I thinking of it, my dad must have said, you know, hey, my son
kid
loves
he,
you.
He
and
loves
your
hair.
Yeah.
You're like John Travolta with Al Pacino in Saturday Night
Live. Yeah, right.
Al Pacino.
Only the way less cool version.
So, all right. So, you're doing that. You're doing your hair up in junior high.
Yeah.
And your dad's direct. Now, was that the first time you'd been to a set?
No, I went to Doogie Howser and I went to Northern Exposure.
When you were like 13?
Yeah.
Well, but wasn't Northern Exposure taping way up there? Where did it tape?
Where did that tape?
Yeah, that tape. Portland or something.
Yeah, it did. But we went up there.
Oh, you
I
did?
Think we did. Yeah, and we took a trip up there. That's right. We took a trip up there. And I remember John Corbett being the nicest guy, man. He would just be really cool and like you know.
Yeah.
You hear all these stories about, oh, they're stars, don't bother them.
Yeah.
He was the coolest. And then, you know, I got to meet, like, all the cast. It was just cool. It was just fucking cool.
So did you want to, did you know you wanted to do that?
For me, it was never a thought to even ever do anything else. Like, it was never, like.
It's weird, I guess, because, you know, you see your, it's practical to you.
Right.
Because your dad's in the business.
Right.
Like, there's a job people have.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously you wanted to be, you know, what's his name, Luke Perry.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, your access to it was that, like, my dad goes to work there. It's like an available job. There must have been some, like, closeness to it. Like, it didn't seem like it was impossible.
No, because that was, yeah, as I was a kid thinking about that.
Yeah.
And just, you know, my parents and my, even my brother who's younger than me.
Yeah.
They're so like, legitimately entertaining and funny, and it was just kind of our language, you know.
Are they funnier than you?
I mean, here's the thing: we all make fun of each other as a family.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of how we talk, you know.
Right.
And I feel like I always got it the hardest.
Yeah,
and I think that I remember feeling like. Not so much with the family, but because, like, there, you know, there was love there all the time. Like, remember feeling like, oh, I gotta come back. I gotta say something funny, you know, to be part of this.
Poor
know,
guy,
like,
poor kid with the Luke Perry haircut, getting his balls busted.
And
by
they
his
would
whole
fuck
family.
With me too. My dad would call me Ledgehead.
Yeah,
yeah.
But your parents are still married.
Yeah.
So you, like, grew up in a state.
I know, man. I know everyone. Every time I read an article, it's like, oh, comedians have demons and shit. I always think, like, maybe my demons are, like, where are my demons?
they're
in there real, real far.
You get along with your parents?
Yeah, they're fucking awesome. I love them so much. It's so weird to say.
Do you see them often?
All the time. I saw them yesterday.
I love it. But I mean, like, it's sort of interesting because you, like, you have an intensity to you and a, you know, fundamental social discomfort.
Right.
That, you know, when you see, you're like, that guy.
Yeah.
He's trouble, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you're just nervous in general.
Yeah, a lot of times, people think, you know, or people, like, they'll be like a lot of times people think, like, oh, he's a bro or mm-hmm. something, you know, like,
right.
I couldn't be further from that. Like, I don't.
No, you're like a loner.
Yeah, and I think all that shit is in your head, you know. So it's like you're an outsider if you feel like you're an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Not necessarily because you're a fucking weirdo.
Well, I think they just associate the look. And maybe the confidence of, like, who you are on screen or on stage. But you're, like, one of those guys, not unlike a lot of us. You know, you do your thing, and then off stage, you're like, ugh.
Oh, man, if I, like, all it takes. Yeah. I remember, this is before you knew who I was.
Yeah.
I obviously knew who you were. I've known who you were forever. But when I, by the way, my dad's a big fan of yours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he really is. Yeah,
oh,
he really
nice.
Is. I should say that. But so I remember you were at the Improv one night.
Yeah.
This was 2007 or 8,
yeah.
7 probably. And I was like, oh, fucking Mark Maron's on. And I went to go watch you, and you came off stage, and I was like, and you just were in your own head just thinking about some shit.
Yeah.
I was the only person in the hallway. I remember how it used to be,
yeah.
like with the hallway coming out. And then and I was like, hey, man, that was great. That was hilarious. And you were like, I fucked up. and I was like, how could he think he fucked up? I remember this is before I really was, you know,
doing. Yeah,
well,
you
I wasn't know, a professional.
You're
you
just
know?
Doing it like a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, how could he think he fucked up? And now I totally know what that feeling is like, you know? Like, I just absolutely, like, because all it takes is one little thing. You get off stage and somebody says something like, oh, man, you were much better than last night.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, what fucking happened last night?
Yeah, I thought last night was good. Tonight was not that good.
That fucks you. That fucks me up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, like, yeah, we're like, I think that's one of the things that people don't realize, especially when you have the kind of confidence you have on stage or whatever. With me, because I'm bleeding all the time and yelling and complaining something, you know, that it's not so surprising that off stage I might be a little insecure. But I think with somebody like you, they're like, what?
Yeah.
But you don't show it that much. You just sort of, like, mind your own business. You're a mind your own business guy.
Yeah.
You have friends, right?
Oh, yeah. I do. I'm fortunate. I have friends that I fucking love. And
forever or like comics?
For a long time.
Yeah?
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, but, like you do a podcast, right?
Yeah.
How often does that go up?
It's like twice a week. It's a 10-minute podcast. We do 10 minutes.
And you do it with Brian?
Brian Callen and Will Sasso.
I don't know if I know Sasso.
Yeah.
I know Brian.
Yeah, well, of course you know Brian.
Yeah. I think we're okay, him and I, sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
The last I checked, we're okay.
Yeah, he's never said anything bad about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have old
friends, like from high school?
Yeah.
And shit?
Well, high school, I have like one friend that I keep. Oh, no, I have two friends I keep in touch with from high school. One was my brother's friend that is like one of my best friends now. And the other.
You stole your brother's friend?
Yeah, no, he's still closer to my brother.
Yeah, all right. What's the age difference?
My brother's 3.5 years younger than me.
What's he do?
He's a director.
Yeah, successful?
Yeah, he did a movie called American Animal that was it's on Netflix now, and it was one of those movies that was very critically like.
What was it about?
It was about a guy who is dying.
Yeah.
And he decides one day that he's not sick anymore, and he's just going to live by those rules.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the devolve, like it shows him devolving mentally and physically over the course of like 3 days, and it all takes place in like an apartment. So it's.
Does he end up kicking the sickness?
No, no. It just it's kind of he doesn't die or not die. It's just kind of like his deterioration, and it's sad, but it's funny too.
Did your brother write it?
He wrote it, directed it, and he plays the guy.
Oh, really?
And a lot of critics.
What's his name?
Loved it, Matt D'Elia. Yeah, he was on some top 5 lists, top 10 lists.
Oh yeah.
But it was one of those movies that just kind of didn't make it easy for him to do his second movie.
Oh, why? Because it was so personal or so?
Well, no, it was just, it was very specific, you know? It's like, but we have other stuff that we're putting together that we're trying to do.
You and him?
Yeah.
You're working together now?
Dude, I just like working with people I like, man.
Well, I hope that's good. You like your brother then.
Yeah.
What about your old man? What's he, is he get involved?
He actually directed my last special.
Did he?
Yeah.
The
White Male Black Comic. Yeah, he, that I did for Comedy Central.
White Male Black Comic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He it was funny too because I asked him, I was like, hey dad, will you direct my special? And he was like, you want me to fucking direct your special? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, fuck yeah, I would love to. And I was like, all right, cool. Just so you know, like I'm hiring you. Like just as a joke.
Yeah.
You know? And it was funny too because he made like, he made like no money.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
And of course he doesn't give a shit about it.
Right.
I mean, he's the most sentimental guy in the fucking, on the planet. So
right.
He was like, my son, you know?
Yeah.
But I joke around about him. He made a few thousand dollars and I was like, now I paid you back for everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We're even.
Yeah, exactly.
So he did a good job, I assume.
Yeah. I loved the way it looked and turned out. And
is it popular? Did it do well?
It did really well for me, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In what way?
Butts in seats.
Did it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Big change.
Yeah, big, yeah. You know what happened, actually?
From Netflix.
No, it was on Comedy Central. But what happened is there was a bit that got online that went viral that was like, that changed kind of changed everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Which bit?
It was a bit I do about drunk girls.
Oh, yeah.
And it got to a point, not really now, but where people would be like coming to see, like if I shoot something and it airs, I don't do that joke anymore because I want to work on other shit. You know,
right.
I think other comics are that way too, but
it's the way we think. But like, I'm of two minds about it. I mean, like I don't always know, especially when you're just breaking. Right. So let's say you get known for that bit.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden people want to like, there's two kinds of people. They're like, I hope he does new shit. But those are people that have been watching you for years.
Right.
But some people are going to see that bit. Some people are bringing friends. Like, let's go see him do that.
That's true.
But look at Jim Gaffigan for a million years. Hot Pockets. He couldn't get rid of Hot Pockets. Now he does it as an encore sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Encores are cool. But to me, with all due respect, it was a little different back then because you can just YouTube it now. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm of the mindset where it's like when somebody calls out, do the drunk girls thing. I fucking say YouTube that shit.
Really?
Yeah. I got new stuff.
Uh-huh.
I hope you like this. Here we go. You know? I just feel like that's the way.
No, I mean, I do that too, and I think that's right, but nobody really, there's nobody in my audience is sort of troubled, polite, sensitive. I don't think you and I have the same audience.
Yeah, sure.
You know, usually they're grown-ups, and they're not going to be sitting there taping my bits clandestinely. I don't think I've ever been taped in a club where they put it on. It's never been a threat for me, which is a testament to having a good audience. But like the relationship I have with my audience is so intimate because of this thing and whatever.
That's truly awesome, man. I envy that.
Right, but I feel the insane pressure to come up with new stuff, or to at least like and you do too. But you know, for the YouTube
thing,
I see
what you're saying.
But no, but I mean, like, what are most, when you look at out at your audience, were they college kids usually? Teenagers?
Well, it's like 20s, 30s.
Yeah,
yeah.
And when the Comedy Central thing happened, like. Well, you weren't selling out, or now you can sell out? Like,
I was not selling out, and now comedy I am selling out, yeah.
Are you doing theaters?
Yeah, I'm doing a theater tour now.
Like how big? The 800, 900, or 1,200, 1,500?
I'm doing 1,000 to 1,400.
Well, that's because of the show, too.
Yeah, it's all different stuff, you know? Like,
right.
I think that it's good to, like, I have this thing where if I get any sort of like I did this episode of Workaholics, that show on Comedy Central, and I played a pedophile, and it was like a really like episode because I played a pedophile, but it was a funny show. So a lot of that episode was very popular, and a lot of people would see me and call me the guy, like the guy's name was Topher, and they'd be like, hey, it's Topher,
right?
Like, that makes me never want to do that show again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or if I get popular, or whatever, if something like that drunk girl's bit, if people know me from that, I don't ever want to do it again.
Why?
Because I don't know. I think if I'm being truly honest, this is kind of fucked up, but I've thought about this. I think it has something to do with the fact that I feel a little bit of, being totally honest, I feel a little bit shitty that they know me from that bit,
right?
And they don't know me,
right?
Which is a weird insecure thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be like, you don't think it. I get that too, where it's sort of like there's like, even just the other night I did a show, and I was a little more aggressive than I do. I used to be more aggressive on stage and push it more and like oversell and get angry.
Right, right.
But I needed to do it because of the situation I was in. But I felt ashamed of it. And I know that a lot of people were like, man, I didn't know you had it in you or whatever. Yeah, I used to do that shit all the time. I used to be a lot more aggressive on stage. It's taken me years to relax. So some part of my brain, like if somebody came up to me and said, I've never seen you before, you kicked ass. There was part of me that's like, enough of that one. Yeah, I don't want you to, I'm not always like that.
Right, kind of thing.
But in you saying that, I mean, I can understand that about Topher, but do you think like are there bits that you feel like you're really representing yourself, or you just feel that weird insecurity like you're never going to be known, or that anytime anybody likes you, you're like, but you don't really know me? I mean, is that in there all the time?
I don't know. You know what? Like, another thing too that makes me think of what you're saying is, or what you're asking is, like, I've been doing stand-up for about 8.5 years.
Right.
So...
would not a long time, really.
Right. It certainly doesn't feel like a long time. But, like, you know, my first hour was about stuff that I thought was funny. You know, it was like...
this special?
Yeah.
Right.
It was like, you know, stuff that I've observed, and like, I'm like, oh, that's funny to me.
You did like the German guy?
Yeah, well, that was before that. But yeah, I talk about how like black guys laugh or something.
Right,
you know what I mean? And and as I get older, and as I get older in comedy, it's more fulfilling to talk about stuff that has happened to me or how I feel about
how you doing with that stuff. Is you mean that you didn't do that on the special?
I did not do that on the special, because when I shot my special, I think I was 31 or something.
What was that, like 2 years
ago? And to me my favorite guys were always silly. I love being silly. Like, I just think that if it's silly,
like, who are your favorite guys?
Like Eddie Murphy or Jim Carrey,
right?
Or Robin Williams,
right?
You know. And so I
big,
yeah,
yeah,
and I just think that's funny, and my I feel
sure,
like that's me. I feel like that's me too. So like,
and also I think you get lost in it too, because like your offstage personality is, you know, sort of quiet,
right?
And you know, like you kind of get big,
yeah.
Like I know that like a lot of your bits like are it's character driven, and it's things that like everyone can understand, and there's like, you know, goofy. kind of not stereotypes, but you know, you kind of you take something that's familiar and then kind of push it over the top.
Yeah. Definitely, and that is definitely what I did on my first special for sure. And I still have material like that. I'm going to shoot my next special, but for instance, there's a bit in my next special that I'm going to do. I dislike sports. I just don't. I never cared.
Yeah, I think I've seen this. But
Like the first time I started talking about that bit, I was like, I could never get away with saying that.
It's definitely anti-bro.
That's true, right? Yeah, exactly. But it's actually how I feel about it. You know? So I was like, I'm going to talk about how I don't like sports, and I'm just going to see how it goes.
I saw you do it at Oddball.
Right.
Yeah, it went good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but now the bit's a little older, and I've done it for about a year or a year and a half, and I can't wait to shoot it so I don't have to do it anymore, but when I first started doing that bit, I was like, man, it feels really good to let people know that I don't like sports. You know?
It's so funny. It's like the first time you ever spoke your mind.
Yeah, exactly. So I took a stand.
Yeah,
Chris. Exactly. And it felt so fucking good. And it felt like I was growing up, man. It felt like I was like...
As a comic.
Yeah, it really did. And I was... And I think that I did get a little attention, at least in the clubs, quickly, you know, like early on.
Yeah.
Like I was getting thrown going in between two comics that I'd watched growing up, and I was like, oh, fuck, I got to be good.
You mean when he started? Or recently, you mean?
When I first started.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, I have no business going in between fucking John Caprillo and Dove Davidoff or whoever it was, you know? And it felt like in the past few years I've really been able to just kind of... Also, I don't give a fuck now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you first, you're like, I really care what these people think. And now I realize, as a comedian, making people laugh is amazing. I love it. But I really am up there for me.
Right.
I don't know if that's how you feel as well. Like, right.
That's really all I got.
Yeah.
I've never known as everyone's entertainer.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
No, but I think it's a natural evolution. I mean, you're 8 years in.
Yeah.
You've got your, you know, you paid your dues a bit and you've got your chops and you know how to do it and you know how to, you know, really blow a room apart. Mm. And I think also when I see a guy like you, somebody who does who's so big on stage that, like, I don't know how you adjust. You know, from that, I think that the experience of doing characters and then sort of doing all the physical humor that you do and sort of acting things out that eventually when you feel comfortable up there and you feel real confidence as opposed to like I just got to kill that you know you got a little more space
right and you know that kind of thing like this won't be on the next special I do, but I've started doing new material now where I'm talking about how like how I don't have kids and how that makes me feel and how my friends, I'm watching them have kids.
Yeah.
And that's all very personal to me, you know, like, and that feels therapeutic. And that's now it's like, that being said, me doing that on stage, it's not going to take away from me. If I'm telling a story about a kid, then all of a sudden the kid said this and doing the kid as a character, you know what I mean? Like, that's just silly, and that's just what I like doing.
Well, that's that's your style.
Exactly.
So now you're saying that you're able to inform your style with more of your point of view.
Right.
As opposed to just doing, you know, these broad character bits.
Yeah, right.
That's good, man. I mean, and in 8 years, to be quite honest with you, just because you got the success that you've gotten because your ability to entertain, you know, it's good that you still are conscious of growing as a comic who wants to do something more personal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of the curse of being able to entertain early on. Like most guys kind of stumble through 8 years and then a break comes.
Right.
Like, you know, from the get go, because you were so, you know, big.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, that guy can do it.
Right.
And
right.
All right. I got 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. I'll do
it. Yeah. I had 10 minutes. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, all right. So in high school, what were you doing in high school? Were you doing acting?
I was doing acting. I was acting. I was doing like plays and shit.
You wanted to be an actor?
I did. Yeah, I always wanted to be a comedian, but that was so scary to me. So I was like, I'll be an actor.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was 11, I'd be like, I'll be an actor. I'll get famous and then I'll do stand up.
Right. Did you ever think in your mind,
which is an idiotic idea, by the way? Let me put that out there.
What, to do an actor first?
To have the to not come up as a comedian is is wrong.
No,
well,
I
don't. Well, it's not wrong. I shouldn't say it's wrong, but it's way harder to be respected among your peers that
as
way.
As a comedian.
Yes.
You mean if you don't come up as a comedian?
Yeah.
Like as if you wanted to be an actor and then you became a comic.
I feel bad for people that are actors that have always wanted to be a comedian and then they're like, I'm going to try it. Because it's like, oh man, you got to be extra good almost.
Well, what's worse is guys who want to be actors and they put together 10 minutes to try to get showcases.
Right.
In a way. But yeah. I don't know like how clear you were about what you were doing when you started. But you know, even if you talk to Dice, uh-huh. you know, Dice wanted to be an actor.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. That's all he wanted to be.
Really?
He wanted to be a fucking actor.
I mean, there's different reasons to do stand-up. For me, it was always about, I feel like I'm a comedian, and acting is great because you can work if you work and you.
But did you
money.
Train as an actor?
I did. Yes.
Okay. So,
but I dropped out of everything. Like I was.
But
just
like, all right. So you're in high school. You're doing things. Okay. In your heart, you want to be a comedian, but you don't have the balls. All right. Get it. But you like you want to be in on camera.
Yeah.
So you want to act.
Right.
So you're doing plays.
Right.
And then were you taking classes? Was your father helping you out?
I went to NYU.
Now, what's your dad thinking when you're telling him you want to his career in show business?
Before he ever saw me do anything, he was like, I should probably talk to him about how hard it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did?
And then I think he saw me in a play and he was like, oh, I'll let him, you know.
Seems like you might have some.
Maybe, yeah. Who knows? I mean, I was probably terrible.
He
but.
Didn't tell you this, though? He didn't say
nothing? Nah, he eventually said I was thinking I was probably going to have to, because, you know, look, my dad's in the business and he said,
he's heartbreaking.
He sits down in front of actors all the time, his whole life. And he says a lot of actors come in and audition and he wishes somebody who loved them would be like,
stop.
Maybe you should, you know, yeah. In a caring way. I mean, my dad's not cold, but.
No, you know. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean, I notice it all the time. Like, you know, it was touch and go for me for a long time, but I mean, I didn't have anything else to do. You know, but I have to assume, you know, even when I was doing my show and I got to audition people,
right.
I could barely handle it.
I know, it's
you know, to sit there, it's just sort of like, and I don't know what they're doing.
I know.
I don't know what they're doing all day. I don't know what, like, it's just heartbreaking.
It is, really, it really is.
But you know, if someone's got a dream, they got a dream.
Yeah, you got it. Well, you're gonna not.
And train. You never know. Who the hell knows? But at some point, you kind of know, right?
I guess, yeah. But sometimes
you just don't know.
But you're right.
And well, also,
but that's the thing, though. It's like if you hit on 20, sometimes you're gonna get an ace. Like,
right.
And when that happens, people hear those stories and they're like, oh, well, I'll fucking try.
Right. But you know? but also for some people the payoff is different, you know, like if somebody gets like a one episode on a TV show and they've been banging their head against the wall for 6 years,
right.
It's a big deal.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know. It's a projection to assume that they're all heartbroken.
That's,
you know,
absolutely, yeah.
But I'm doing it, not you, but I just
but I feel the same way when I'm watching that.
Yeah, because it's our own fear. I mean, you know, you did all right. You have more success than I did when I was your age. But you know, still, I got to imagine that on some level, you know, how you're doing pretty fucking well. I don't assume that you're sitting there going like, what if this ends?
Well, that's the other thing too. That's one of the best things about stand-up is like at least
you can always
just
do stand-up
going on stage. I mean,
that's true. That's true. That's in my mind. I know I can do that.
Right.
I can always do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right. So you go to NYU. You went to NYU.
Yeah, I went for a year and then I dropped out because that was just like
to the film program or the acting.
I went
program?
To the acting program.
You got in. That's an audition situation, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you were good enough to get in, and then what happened? What do you mean? You did.
Yeah, yeah. I got in, and I got in, and then I just when I think about it now, because I don't ever really think about it, but like when I think about it now, like it was just like I didn't understand. Like we would like. I get acting is a craft or whatever, but like we had breathing class. Like we literally had a class called breathing and that was the class name. And you would go and you would fucking breathe. Like that was the class. And I mean, dude, imagine you in that class. Like me in that class, it's the same thing. You're like, what? So, and then I'm like, all right, well, let's do the thing. And then we would do the breathing and then a teacher would be like, that's not really how you're supposed to do it. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? We've been breathing I've been breathing for the whole, my life, dude. And then there were classes there was a movement class. And then there was I was just like, yo, get me the fuck out of here.
This is not happening fast enough. This is not the kind of acting I had in mind.
You know, and maybe that means I don't know. Maybe that means I'm disrespectful. I don't know what the fuck that means. But for me, I was like, this is not what I can't do this. So that was one of the things where I was
You learned nothing.
Well, no, there were teachers that were that I respected there that I was like, oh, I like this. I like what he's saying. And I can remember specific things where, like, I remember one time I did a scene with somebody and one of my acting teachers that I liked a lot, his name was Ronnie.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, you're not making eye contact with the person. Make eye contact with the person the whole time. And I was like, okay. And I did it. And I remember when I was doing the scene with them, I was like, wow, this feels like fucking for real.
You know?
And I was like, oh, that's a good fucking note. Fucking look at the guy. You know? So.
That's funny if you wrote a book. One, fucking look at the guy.
Yeah. Two, breathe.
Breathe.
I guess.
Don't get too hung up on it, though.
No, right. So.
What other things did you
do?
So you
I left
with?
That. So I left
but
NYU.
But that's one of those weird things, though, where you're like, it's stuck in your head, right?
It did, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I remember that class. I remember that year pretty fucking vividly. Like, that was a formative year in my life. Like, I was in New York for a year.
Yeah.
It was cold as fuck,
yeah.
You know, in the winter.
You've never been out, since you were 12.
Nah.
Yeah.
Even still, when you're a kid, you're invincible, you know?
Right, but now and you like it when it's
Now I'm 19, and I'm like, oh, this is real cold. I'm a person. I'm out. I'm walking in the streets. Some guy will be like, fuck you. And I'm like, yeah, nah. Like, this is me in life now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
did you miss home?
I think I don't know. I had been home and always very close with my family. So I think that year I was like, you know, I felt okay. I felt good.
Yeah, but, good to be away.
But I did go through an actual real like kind of depression. Like I wasn't going to class by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I was only sleeping in the day and I would only see the night. Like I would wake up at like 6 p.m. and then just kind of like go work out at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And I made
friends. So you're isolated.
Yeah, I was pretty fucking isolated and I was like not in college.
Yeah.
It was like I was like a New Yorker.
What were you doing?
I was like not a...
just like going out all night
I would wake
eating?
Up. I would eat.
Yeah.
I would go to work out.
At 2 in the morning.
Yeah. And then go get something to eat. I'd be like the only guy. If I felt like Travis Bickle.
Right.
Like I was like I was like taxi driver. Like I was like...
Because you didn't
look
you
at
didn't...
these creeps, look at these fucking scum, look at these fucking people, and I'm one of
Someday
them.
Someday a rain will come,
right?
And wash
exactly.
So, so no good.
I was like Travis Bickle in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And so you called your parents to say I'm going to drop out.
Yeah, and they were mad. And I wrote a script that was called Union, and it was about kids that were in and out of college that were like, they were spending their last summer together before, they were in and out of junior college and they were spending their last summer together before one of them was going away to real college.
Yeah.
And I gave it to my
dad. Feature?
Yeah, it was a feature script. I gave it to my dad and he was like, it's not that bad. Like, I'm going to give it to my guy.
Yeah.
And so he helped me out and gave it to his agent. His agent was like, okay. It was not bad. And then I had an acting agent. I personally gave it to my acting agent. And they were like, this is really good. We want to give it to the literary department. And they gave it to the literary department. And I ended up selling it.
Really?
Yeah. I wrote it when I was like 19, 20. And I sold it. And, you know, never came to fruition.
How much?
But did I make off it? Oh, God. Maybe $60,000.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a fucking lot of money for like a 20-year-old.
Hell
like,
yeah.
Oh, cool. I think what happened was they optioned it and then they hired me to rewrite it.
Okay.
That was what it was.
And you rewrote it?
Yeah. And it made the rounds and it was like this production company and that bought it and then it just never came out. It never got into production. And then I got the rights back and then I ended up selling it again to a different company. So I made more money off the same script.
Yeah.
And
you're like, this is how show business works?
I know. I'm like... But as a kid, you know, as a 20-year-old, I was like, I want fucking people to see my shit. Like, right. I don't give a fuck about, you know.
Yeah.
I was always, fortunately, very fine. Like, my my dad was in the business, and he was always there for me,
right,
monetarily if I needed it, you know? And so that was never a real concern for me, which is very fortunate. But so I that script was like 3 or 4 years I was trying to get this thing made, giving it to different people. I would write every day, different ideas, different scripts.
Yeah.
I would write every day for 8 hours, like obsessed. I would write every day from like, and then nothing was happening. And then I was always like, because I always want to be a comedian, and I would always come back to that. And I was like, you know what? This plan of being an actor that's in the business and then getting people to see, hey, maybe I could do stand up isn't working. I've got nothing to lose.
So were you doing any parts in movies or TV?
I was
TV?
Doing part, like I did a part in a movie that never came out. I did.
But you were auditioning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
you
had an acting agent.
Yeah.
And now you had a literary agent too.
Yes. And what happened was I was like, I need people to see what I'm doing right now.
Right.
And I was like, stand-up comedy, I can go on stage tonight and open mic and be in front of somebody.
Right.
And they'll fucking understand that.
But see what you're doing right now for acting? Or for what? Just because you wanted the reward of creating something and having it received.
Well, I always thought I was funny.
Right.
And I was like, my friends, I loved making them laugh. And I was like, I'm just going to make people I don't know laugh.
Right.
And I'm going to try and do that. Because that's what I always wanted to do, most importantly.
So you've been writing obsessively 8 hours a day, auditioning, doing little parts and things that no one would see.
Right.
You're 4 years into it. You're like 22 years old.
Yeah.
And when do you decide to
I did stand up once when I was 23. And then I was like, I don't have a clue how that went. And then I didn't do it again for about 2 years.
That happened to me too.
Really?
When I was in college in 19, maybe 83 or 84, there was one summer, I think it was the summer before my last year. I'm like, I'm going to do it. Like I'd done a team thing with a guy and it was fun. Now I'm like, I'm going to do it myself. I just did open mics for a whole summer and drank and like just going on late.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God damn it. It just almost killed me
because
I was so fucking miserable.
Really?
But I had another year of college and I kind of put it on hold for that last year, the stand up. And then right after college, I moved out here and became a doorman at the store.
Oh, really? I didn't know you were a doorman.
Yeah.
So why were you miserable though? Because
it was so hard. Is that like there was no way in? There was no alternative room. There was no nothing. It's like you want to be a comic. Here's where the open mics are. All right, so go sign up and then see what happens. Right. So there was a lot of like I would try to sign up almost every night to go somewhere, and then you'd end up like it was usually like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday maybe at places, and then you'd wait around all night and you get bumped, and then you like you'd go on for four people and I'd be drinking and it was like, and then you do 5 fucking minutes and your whole world is around these 5 minutes, and you do 5 minutes and you don't got another set for 2 weeks, and you just sat there going like, oh fuck, I gotta do this 5 minutes, and it was like crazy.
It feels like you feel it now.
Yeah. Because everything's hanging on it. Like, I didn't know what else to do. I didn't want to do anything else. So it was like, you just like all day, you're like, oh, on next Tuesday, I'm going to do it. And I hope I can go on when there's more than five people
11
there.
People, yeah.
Right. That was what it was.
Wow.
And then, but whatever. So where'd you go on when you were 23?
The Haha Cafe.
Oh, out in Burbank?
In North Hollywood, I guess it would be. And then I went again when I was 20.
What'd you do? Like one guy? One bit? One character? Two
characters? No, I did 5 minutes. I don't even, 5 minutes of, I don't even remember.
Really?
I think I talked about the joke. Oh, I talked about the TV show 24. It was when that was really popular.
Okay.
It was my New Year's resolution, I remember. In 2006, January 2nd. I went on stage and I was like, I'm going to go on stage once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I went on stage January 2nd and I was like, fuck it. I went on stage January 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th. And I was just like, I just did it. Just started doing it.
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And then like a month later, I got my first real whatever show. It was a bringer show.
Where?
But at the Haha.
Oh, so that was your place.
But oh yeah, for years that was my place.
Yeah.
I loved that place.
Yeah.
Because you could do the open mic and then stay and do the show.
Right. And it's an intimate room. It's not bad room.
Yeah. It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Anytime someone's coming up, they're like, what should I do? I was like, go to the Haha Cafe.
Yeah, hang
just
out.
Do that shit.
Yeah.
And then...
That's like the version of like, don't go to the store yet.
Absolutely.
Stay in the town.
Absolutely.
Stay over the hill for a little while.
Absolutely. I did the comedy store like 2 years in, and I ate shit, and I was like... How did I eat shit that much.
At the OR?
Yes.
Oh, that, because...
Well, the hardest room ever.
It's like it'll eat your guts out.
Yeah.
To figure out how to play that room.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. even if you don't do it for a while and then you go back, you're like, wait. Okay, how do I do this again?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's like, you know, like sometimes in that room, that first joke doesn't go. You just feel it like, poof.
It's so weird and interesting how it's like that. You're right.
And
yeah.
and there are nights there where you're like, oh, this is the best this is going to get. Like, you know, like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm not going to get them over the hump. This is not going to fucking happen.
Right. Right.
But it's okay. So you're 2 years in at the HaHa. You're just doing that.
Yeah.
And then what, you go to a Monday night at the store?
I went to Sunday or Monday, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I went with some of the guys I knew from the HaHa.
Who?
Oh, fuck.
Still around?
No. None of them. I don't think any of them are.
Really?
I ate shit specifically hard, like,
because you're cocky
more than anyone.
And just
yes, absolutely,
right.
Because I probably was doing well at the HaHa,
right.
And I was like, I got this shit,
right.
That's the worst attitude at the Comedy Store.
Oh no, yes, but
and
it'll just eat you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I was like, okay. And I remember having the thought, don't go back there again for a while.
Yeah.
This is the Comedy Store. And I was like, I should have more respect for this fucking place. And I didn't go back until people would be like, come by the Comedy Store. I'd be like, nah.
For how long?
Another year? Uh-huh. Another year and a half? I remember, like, I wanted to make it where I never wanted to be the guy who was like, can I do a spot?
Right.
I always thought, if somebody wants me to do a spot, they'll ask me to do a spot. And and that's how I'm going to play it.
And keep your dignity.
100%. And that's how I'm going to play it. And so I would do the belly room, and I did the belly room for probably a year and a half. And
just out of stubborn pride, you weren't going to fucking kiss any ass.
Absolutely not.
Right.
And I didn't do it. And I would literally stay there from 9 to whenever. And even when I would get on, I would stay there afterwards because I felt like being here is a good idea, you know? Yeah.
So you were just a guy hanging around.
Yes. Mind you, I was married then. So
when did that happen?
That was 2006.
Who the fuck did you marry?
I married a girl, a really sweet girl. She's great. Her name is Emily.
Yeah.
And
how long did you date her?
2 years.
Uh-huh. And then you got married.
And then we got married for about a year and a half.
What went wrong?
Well, I think it started with me doing, you know, stand-up every night.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Were you living with her? Oh, you were married.
Yeah, we were living together in the valley. Apartment? Yeah, an apartment in the valley. And
she wanted to start a family? She's not in the business?
No, she is an actress, and she works every now and then. And this is so cliche, but I was married to the, you know, stand-up. It was like, that's
sure,
so corny to say.
Right,
like,
and so it didn't end acrimoniously or what?
We were cool. We're cool now.
You
like,
are.
Like, she's great. She's engaged.
Okay.
And whenever I see her, you know, you run into people in L.A., you're like, hey, what's up? How you doing?
You're happy.
The guy, not that it matters to what I think, but the guy's great. You know, it's cool. It's cool to see.
Well, it's a good story.
Well, also, I think that they're up until, I think she got engaged recently, like, I would always feel guilty.
Right.
And now that this is, you know, this may be conceited, but now that I know that she's engaged and happy, I'm like, oh. Fuck. Okay, good.
I didn't destroy her life.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't that bad, right?
No, but
she loved you?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know,
I do.
She wanted a family, and I was like, but I got to make money.
Yeah, but I'm selfish. And
everything I want?
Yeah, I
want
to do stand up and fuck random people. You know, it's a lot of things I still have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right. So how does it transpire at the store? Where do things change?
Well, so Tommy, who worked as the general manager, right? He was there every night almost, and
laying the school on you. It's like pretty soon, man. Pretty soon.
Well, I never even went down there because I didn't want to. I was so insecure. I didn't want people to be like, oh, he's probably near. I didn't want Tommy to think, oh, he's near me because he wants a spot.
Well, what, you'd be one of like 20, 30 people.
I know.
Wandering around acting like they didn't really want anything.
I know, right.
You know,
I know.
Being cool.
So Tommy actually said to me, he said, hey, when are you going to start coming down to the original room Sunday, Monday? And I was like, oh, shit. This is what I was, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to get any spots.
So he saw you up there.
I think he said, he's like, you know, I peek my head in every now and then, you know, and people talk about you and you come, you know, come down Sunday, I'll get you in.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'll be there Sunday.
Yeah.
And I got there Sunday, and I remember like Dan Bilek,
yeah,
who would run the thing room there. I would be like, hey, Tommy said to come down or whatever. And Dan's like, yeah, okay. Tommy told that to 20 fucking people, you know?
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh shit. Okay. That's how this works.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm just going to be here until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
If you got time, great. If not, fuck, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And then I would do that Sunday, Monday nights. So now I was doing that Friday nights.
And was he
Sunday
putting
on? And Monday nights. I would get on every now and then, maybe every other week.
You'd wait there all night.
I would wait there all night. I'd be like, this is my job, I guess. If I want to be a comedian, this is part of it.
Waiting.
I would do it every... Dude, I'm telling you, I would do it Sunday, Monday from 9 to fucking 2 a.m. I would sit there. And I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah. Because you're watching everybody else.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going like, I can do that.
Yeah, you know, or I'm hanging out back, meeting people. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know this.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but like...
It's our people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eventually Tommy was like, so eventually I got on, and then he's putting a showcase together for Mitzi. This is when she was still watching the showcases. And I think it was the last time she came to the club for a showcase.
Huh.
And I went up and she passed me. And I think the next person she passed was Justin Martindale. But that wasn't for a showcase. She was just like there and saw mm-hmm. him in a Bringer show.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's been there since.
That was it, huh?
Yeah.
Got in under the wire.
Yeah. So.
And then.
Feels good, though. Yeah. That felt good.
And then he just started working you.
Yeah, he started working me. You know, I would do fucking 12-30 spots.
But that makes you like, I was never the guy that had that. That was always a drag because you really got to fucking push.
Made
you strong, right?
Yeah, it really did. And I fucking loved 12-30 spots, man. I would still do them. If that was my spot, I would still do them. I loved doing it, man.
Why?
I loved that there were 8 people that I fucking don't know that were, maybe 2 of them thought, hey, that guy looks cool.
Yeah.
Or maybe 6 of them thought, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
I just loved that. I loved being like...
The half-empty room?
Fuck it.
Yeah.
What the fuck do I have to lose at this point?
Yeah.
And then if I got them laughing, man, that was like... Yeah, that was like the best thing ever. I was just like, man, it was a step every time that happened.
These idiots
it was a step
have been
closer.
Here for 3 hours.
Yep. They seen some really funny guys and some fucking terrible guys.
Yeah,
and
their brains have been fucked.
Yeah, they're not even. They're like right now. They're like, man, stand-up comedy is probably the last thing I want to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And if
we'll go after the next guy.
Yeah.
All right, this guy. We'll stay one more.
Yeah, and they're just being there.
Yeah.
And if I made them laugh, I felt like a step closer to just being a real comedian.
And then he just started integrating you into the schedule.
Yeah, and then one night, he was like, yeah, I'm going to put you after John Caparulo. I'm going to put you out. He would always put me after Rick Ingram.
Yeah.
Which he would
doing
just like,
crowd work.
He would tear the room apart, and people love him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's hard, you know, he's hard to follow. And I would go up and try to put the room back together. And then I just felt like, man, I have no business being here. I have no business being here. But then you're just like... Oh, I guess I fucking know everybody.
Yeah.
I guess I'm one of these guys. You know? You just kind of like, oh. Now then you look at someone else looking at you like that.
Yeah.
And you're
like, I know that.
Oh,
look.
Shit. Yeah. I'm the Steve Renazzisi part now.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's funny. So how did the relationship with Whitney, how did that casting go with her show, with Whitney?
We started doing, well, she had been around doing open mics. And
when you started?
When I already started, I knew of her, but
where at Ha
Ha? Nah, she was everywhere.
Yeah.
I felt like, are there three? I was like, are there three of her? Yeah. Like,
she just went everywhere doing
everywhere.
Sets. Yeah.
She was at fucking, she was like doing a set somewhere where there was no show.
Yeah.
And, and he'd be like, oh, all right. And so she would be like, I remember one of the first things she said to me, she was like, you from San Diego? And I was like, no. And she's like, you look like you'd be from fucking San Diego. You look like healthy and shit. And I was like, I'm from New Jersey. And she was like, oh, all right. Well, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And
did you have a romantic thing with her?
No, but like, at least to me, it felt like flirting.
Yeah.
You know? But, and then we just, you know, she was like my peer in comedy. So, and you know, coming up, you really cling to those.
Sure.
So, she got passed at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And then maybe like a year later I did. And, but she would like be like very like coachy to me, but I wanted it. It wasn't like she was, you know, and so she was like, I wrote this script. I'm going to try and pitch this show. I wrote it with you in mind to play my boyfriend. And I was like, oh, cool. I wonder who's going to end up playing it. You know, like, because that you hear that fucking every other day in Hollywood.
Yeah.
As a young actor. So she was like, I sold it. And I was like, whoa, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
To NBC. Oh, great. She was like, I want you to play the boyfriend. And I was like, cool. I mean, I've heard that so much, so whatever. I'm jaded at this point. It's like I grew up in the business. I know how it goes, you know? So she's like, hey, we want you to come in and read for it. I was like, cool. I went in and I read for it with her and the producer of the show.
Yeah.
And I left, and Whitney called me. She's like, hey, we're going to test you for it. Like, you're great. And I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get this fucking part because it, but you know why? Because it was written for me.
Right.
That's why.
Yeah. And there's a million actors.
Right. It's just not how it works.
Yeah.
And so I tested for it, and I had really long hair and a beard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not cutting it for the test.
Yeah.
They're going to fucking, who gives a shit? They're going to be like, he's too hairy.
Right.
And who cares?
Yeah.
I went in, and
so I get some part of you really just is insecure and like, fuck you.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
You're like, you almost didn't want the part.
And at this point, well, I mean, a part of me was like, at this point, I was like, whatever, I can do stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, and, but deeply wanting the part. You know what I mean? I mean, just like, would probably kill small animals for this part.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for it, and I got it. And
it was, shave.
Yeah, and I cut my hair
for
the part,
yeah.
and I trimmed my beard.
Yeah.
And it was funny, too, actually, because I was like, oh, they're going to make me fucking go short, and everyone on TV has it. And they were like, let him keep a little beard. And I was like, oh, cool. Maybe they think that's my style.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they know me a little bit. So I got it, and it got picked up, and we got a first season, and it felt like we were holding on the whole first season, just trying to figure out the show. And, and then we got a second season, and we were like, fuck, oh, cool, man. And then it got canceled, and then I got this other gig, Undateable.
How'd that come about?
Undateable?
Bill Lawrence, a fan?
Yeah. It was actually funny because I was on Whitney for the second season, and you know how they don't decide to pick up the shows for a while until they do.
It's a nightmare.
And Bill Lawrence cast Brent Morin, who you know Brent.
Yeah.
He's a comedian, funny. And he is a buddy of mine. I've known him for years and years and years. Like, I've known him for when we first started stand-up. We kind of started at the same time, but he was 19.
Yeah.
So Brent had that part. He had like the co-lead of the Undateable. And Bill was like, he said something like, you're friends with Chris D'Elia. I want him to be the other guy. And Brent's like, that's great. He's on Whitney for NBC, and Undateable is for NBC. Like, you can't even have him in second position, because if they say, the whole thing was, if the head of NBC said, yeah, shoot that pilot with Chris, then he's kind of saying, who gives a fuck about Whitney in a way?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, otherwise, if they pick up both shows, they got to reshoot Undateable.
Yeah.
But Bill has got some, you know, clout. So he was like, I don't care. If you pick up Whitney, great. I still want to shoot the pilot with Chris.
Yeah.
So I shot the pilot, and Whitney got canceled. And Whitney was like, I called Whitney. I remember I called her, and I was like, hey, they offered me this role on Undateable, and I don't want to take it. Obviously, be in second position, but I don't want to take it unless it's okay with you.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, oh, go for it, of course. What network is it for? And I was like, NBC. And she was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, fuck it. I mean, you gotta work. So,
but that was a sign to her that it must have been, the writing was on the wall.
I guess looking at it, just, that's what it was. But it certainly, the head of NBC was like, Bill Lawrence, I'm not deciding to cancel Whitney. If you want to shoot the fucking pilot, go ahead. It felt like that.
So Bill was rolling the dice.
It felt like Bill was rolling the dice.
Right.
But so I don't really know the real reason of why.
But and how's the show doing?
Undated was doing well. We're going in the second season. I think creatively the show is, NBC really likes the show, and it's the people who watched it, it feels like they really like it. So that's great. You know, that's not always the case.
And how's your dad feel about your success?
I he's the most sentimental guy in the world. So it's almost emotional to watch him be emotional about it, you know. He posted a thing the other day cuz you know I played Town Hall and the other day and at the New York Comedy Festival and he put this post on Facebook. My grandfather Bam, Grandpa Bam, he passed away, but he used to sell newspapers like right near Town Hall.
Uh-huh.
And that's like just emotion overload for my dad. It's like, I mean, my dad used to sell papers here and make people laugh. You know, people would drive up from politicians to garbage workers and they would come up and my dad would sell them papers and now you're here and you sold out Town Hall and it, man, now that I say it out loud now, it's just really sweet and it's just very cool that my dad feels that way about that, you know?
Well, I'm glad you're doing well. It was good talking to you, man.
Yeah, it was good, man.
I feel like we got to know each other.
Yeah, I do too, man. Right. I, you know, I've spent enough time with you, but it's nice to have this conversation with you.
All right, thanks for doing it. That's it. That's our show. That was Chris D'Elia. This is me. I'm back. I enjoy talking to Chris. I enjoy the Comedy Store. That's where we work. Comedy Store, between me and you, is really the last of the... In L.A., it's the only real comedy club. It just is. It's like, it is exactly how it was, give or take a few repairs and weird impulsive additions, but the structure is the same, the tone of the room is the same as it was in the early 70s when Mitzi Shore took it over. It is a very cool place to go again. I'm very thrilled about that. The crowds have been great. They're selling out again, and it's really the only real comedy club in Los Angeles right now. The Ice House, too, is actually a great old room. But I go to the Comedy Store because it's a comics comedy club. You know when some people say, you know, you're a comics comic or whatever? The Comedy Store is actually a comics comedy club, and it's its own world. And I'm glad people are starting to appreciate the weird, creepy history and darkness. And those rooms are just magic some nights, and other nights they're just fucking evil. But it's pretty amazing to see the life coming back into that place. I don't even know why I'm talking about it. I just want to make sure everybody knows that if you come to Los Angeles, go to the Comedy Store, because that's the real shit there. All right? That's what I'm saying. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs, and... you know, get on that mailing list if you want to hear from me every week, and get some merch if you want. New posters are coming. Check the dates. WTFpod.com/calendar. Get some just coffee if you want. I don't know, man. For years, my relationship with the Comedy Store was so weird and so tenuous and so frightening. It was really like a... Like I said that before, though, is like, you know, going to talk with your abuser every time it went to work there. Just there was something that just blew my mind about that place. But it's really fascinating. It's cool again. And I, you know, it's amazing to see some place like that that's gone through so many different weird periods. You know, in the 70s, early 70s, Richard Pryor turned that place inside out, made it just a... like pack it out. And then there was the Kennison years and the Dice years, and then Robin and Roseanne and Jim Carrey were there the years, and then there was the weird years, some years where it was just like dangerous even. And then it kind of like wandered, didn't know if it was going to survive, and now it's just like thriving. It's such a trip, man. I was a doorman at that place when I was 22. I feel so connected to it. It's just so good to feel it being alive. I'm rambling about the fucking Comedy Store. Jesus. Boomer lives!